Welcome again to the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM, and I'm Phil Taylor, your host. I want to remind everyone that Monday night, and it's tonight at 7 o'clock, there is a Zoom conference concerning a Canadian foreign policy and the Meng Wanzhou case, and you can learn about that at hcsw.ca. And we're joined now by Stephen Gowans, and Stephen has written a really important article. I hope everyone will go to gowans.blog, and Stephen is also at Twitter at Gowans Stephen. And the title of the article is "The Problematic Relationship of Canada's Parliament to the Concept of Genocide." Stephen is with us now. How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm doing well, Phil. How are you?
Good, and we're glad you've taken up this topic. This seems to me to Canada's trying to put itself in very dangerous waters by the Parliament taking a free vote, that hasn't been examined exactly as a parliamentary device, but they took a vote and 266-0 decided that China, a major country with whom we do a lot of trade and with whom we are not at war, but China is guilty of genocide. Can you explain where do they come off talking about this subject in the Canadian Parliament? I know you raised the issue of, have they ever thought about any genocide that might have been committed on this continent? I'll leave it to you.
Canada has played a very significant role in what has been called the American Holocaust, which is probably the greatest Holocaust in the modern era, which is the massive depopulation of Aboriginal people from the Americas, including Canada. But insofar as the Canadian House of Commons represents Canada, then Canada's kind of debased genocide by ignoring it where it occurs. That is in Canada. We don't memorialize the Canadian Holocaust, but condemning it where it hasn't, because the House of Commons, as you mentioned, by a vote of 26-4 and 0 against, has declared that Chinese authorities committed atrocities in Xinjiang that contravene the United Nations Genocide Convention. And any impartial observer would point out that that accusation, that conclusion, is completely absurd and rests on no evidence at all. You could explore, obviously we should explore why I say that, but if you look at this accusation within the context, within the way I look at it is first within a geostrategic context. If I say no genocide has been committed, we have to ask, well, why would this accusation be made? Well, the first thing we could look at is the geostrategic context. And let's consider Graham E. Fuller. Graham E. Fuller was CIA station chief in Afghanistan, later became the vice chair of the US National Intelligence Estimate. Then he went on to work for the RAND Corporation. In 2003, he wrote a book called The Xinjiang Problem. And it's interesting to ask why it's a problem, but The Xinjiang Problem. And in The Xinjiang Problem, this, important member of the US intelligence community had written, and I'll just quote from him, "The historical record suggests that the decision of countries and even of international organizations to raise specific human rights issues is often politicized and highly selective. many countries will devote attention to human rights issues in China in inverse proportion to the quality of their overall bilateral relationship. So, you know, we can pause to note that only those who have not paid attention would be blind to the fact that the quality of the overall bilateral relations between either the United States and China or Canada and China have deteriorated sharply. And then he went on to say, predict in 2003, he said it would be unrealistic to rule out categorically American willingness to play the Uyghur card as a means of exerting pressure on China in the event of some future crisis or confrontation. And he continued, in sum, many of China's rivals have in the past pursued active policies in Xinjiang and exploited the Uyghur issue for their benefit. And then he predicted that they would continue to do so in the future. So that's the geopolitical context. The United States and its acolytes, including Canada, regard China as a geostrategic rival and have an interest, as Fuller predicted in 2003, to exploit the Uyghur issue for their benefit. Mm-hmm. So that's the first way I've looked at this. The second way is to ask, who is behind the accusations of genocide in Xinjiang? And there are a number of groups. One is the Victims of Communist Memorial Foundation. So who is that? Well, that's a US government-founded organization dedicated to bringing about the demise of communism, including the demise of the Chinese Communist Party. So as a rival of the Communist Party of China, its accusation about genocide can hardly be taken as impartial. Yeah. Another source, I was just going to mention another source, is the Epoch Times, which is the newspaper of the Falun Gong. Falun Gong is a fanatical anti-Chinese Communist Party cult, which holds that, you know, mixing of the races and homosexuality and feminism and science are satanic plots. And they even went as far as to suggest that Donald Trump was sent by God to destroy the Communist Party of China. So there's them. And then there are these various Uyghur exile groups, such as the World Uyghur Congress, that are funded by the National Endowment for Democracy. And the National Endowment for Democracy is a US government organization whose first president conceded that the NED does overtly what the CIA used to do covertly, which is namely destabilize foreign governments by strengthening what we could call fifth columns. And they do this under the cover of promoting democracy and human rights. And they boasted on Twitter, the NED that is, that has been funding dissident groups or fifth columnists, if you like, in Xinjiang since 2004. So that's the third group that's behind these accusations. And the fourth, and perhaps most important, because this is someone who testified before a House of Commons subcommittee, is a man named Adrian Zenz, who is a fellow at the Victims of Communist Memorial Foundation. He's also a religious fanatic who believes that homosexuality and feminism and communism are abominations against God, and that God has given a mission to destroy the Communist Party of China.
Yeah.
So
he also held a really remarkably ugly view of status of Jews in relation to Christian the notion of that the God will judge us all. And he has almost the classic anti-Semitic position that the Christian God will give them the opportunity of transforming themselves or being burned in hell. I mean, I don't understand how he has gotten past the guards at the gate. You're not, that is intolerable language. And yet he's sitting in front of a parliamentary committee.
Yes, in front of the parliamentary committee and going on so-called progressive radio shows like Democracy Now. They like Zenz on Democracy Now. They've interviewed him as an expert on China.
They don't mention.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I'm learning how to do Zoom. When they interview him, they don't talk about, you might say, his negative side. They only call him an expert, right?
Call him an expert. They don't talk about who he works for, what his basic views are, what his mission is. And his mission, I mean, it's clear his mission is to destroy communism. He is an anti-communist fanatic. That's why he's a fellow at the Victims of Communist Memorial Foundation. One of the third ways I looked at this is to ask, you know, how do the accusers define genocide? So, I mean, we looked at who's making these accusations. There are people who have a political interest in making that accusation, as Graham E. Fuller predicted they would. I mean, as he said, many countries will devote attention to human rights issues in China that are highly politicized and highly selective. But how are they defining genocide? And they do this through a ruse. And this is a ruse regularly used by businesses to dupe consumers and employees. And that is to redefine a word to mean something other than what the word would be reasonably interpreted to mean. So to use this prosaic example of the way in which businesses do it, say to employees, there's the case of a business that might have a dental plan, for example, and it says to its employees, our dental plan covers 90% of the a rate schedule. What they don't tell you is that it covers 90% of a rate schedule established 15 years ago. So that's an example of, you know, of this kind of subterfuge where you redefine words so they seem to say one thing, but in fact you meant something completely different. So if we look at Mike Pompeo, the former U.S. Secretary of State, is one of the first to make this accusation about genocide. Or if we look at Blinken, the current Secretary of State, I mean, they're counting on us not knowing how the UN Convention really defines genocide, and are counting on, say, Canadian parliamentarians from being either too slow-witted to check or too cowardly and unprincipled to object if they do check. So Pompeo has defined genocide, not in the way in which the UN Convention would define genocide, but as forced assimilation. So he's saying China's trying to integrate Xinjiang and its Turkic people into larger Chinese society. And that is genocide by Pompeo's definition. Blinken says the Chinese are engaged in genocide because there are 1 million Uyghurs in concentration camps. Well, there are not 1 million Uyghurs in concentration camps, but even if there were, that would not constitute genocide. But that's what he wants to call genocide. Zenz, the religious fanatic we just talked about, he defines genocide in terms of enforcement of birth control measures. So from 1979 to 2015, you know, the ethnic majority in China, and China is a multinational state, the ethnic majority are Han Chinese. And they were limited to one child per couple as a population control measure. Uyghurs, the Turkic people in Xinjiang, were permitted 2 children in urban areas and 3 in rural, but the restrictions were not rigidly enforced and they often had more children than that. Well, today, all Chinese, Han, Uyghur, are permitted 3 children in rural areas and 2 in urban, and the policy is rigidly enforced. And the enforcement of that policy has led to a reduction in the rate at which the Uyghur population is growing, but significantly, that population continues to grow. So, you know, if the imposition of birth control measures on a population is genocide, then Beijing was guilty of an anti-Han Chinese genocide from 1979 through 2015, when it limited couples to one child. But importantly, when you look at the UN Convention on Genocide, while it's true that one could claim that China was engaged in a genocide against the Uyghurs, if they were intentionally trying to reduce the Uyghur, destroy the Uyghur population by preventing births, they are not trying to prevent births at all. But Zenz has seized on this, the fact that the birth control policy, because it's now rigidly enforced, has led to a reduction in the population growth rate of the Uyghurs as evidence of a genocide. Clearly isn't evidence of a genocide, and it's evidence of Zenz playing around with the definition of genocide so that he can blacken the reputation of the Chinese Communist Party. Yeah. And that's probably explains, you know, what that doesn't probably explain, it does explain why State Department lawyers told Pompeo there is no evidence of genocide in Xinjiang. But that didn't stop Pompeo from making the accusation. He simply changed the definition of genocide. You know, if what the Chinese are doing doesn't meet the U.S. the UN Convention on Genocide, well, I'll simply redefine it to say that genocide is trying to assimilate a population into the larger Chinese society. Bob Rae, our UN representative, accused China of committing genocide. And after he did that, he said, efforts should be made to gather evidence to demonstrate that this is true. So the accusation comes first, and then we gather the evidence. Globe and Mail columnist John Ibbotson conceded that what has gone on in Xinjiang does not meet the U.S. definition of genocide. So he agrees with U.S. State Department lawyers, but all the same, he says Beijing is carrying out genocide. So even if what's happening in Xinjiang doesn't meet the UN Convention on Genocide, well, we'll still say that they're carrying out a genocide anyway, because, well, that's politically convenient for us to do so.
Yeah. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.blog, by the way, and his Twitter account, at gowansstephen. And incidentally, Stephen has written very important books published by Baraka, Israel, a Beachhead in the Middle East, Traitors and Empire, and concerning the history of Korea and Korean War, and Washington's long war on Syria, which is particularly pertinent at this time. Stephen, on this, you know, we're talking, it strikes me, about our own problems. I mean, you point out at the top of your article that we have a genocide issue here, should we care to look into it. We might consider a memorial. I haven't seen anybody say we need an immense memorial, particularly at the spots where some of the horrible elimination of indigenous peoples took place, but particularly also in Ottawa. But we also have a rather peculiar demonstration that for an alleged democratic society, our procedures of establishing facts so as to pass legislation and do good works is this resolution on by Parliament is demonstrates that we don't have any real standards. I mean, you mentioned this man called Zenz. I had a guest earlier from who a professor here in Toronto, but also from Pakistan originally, who pointed out there Zenz doesn't have any peer review. There's no, we don't hear from other experts so that we could conscientiously look into what is a fairly serious accusation. By the way, as you know, countries, and especially a large country that has been colonized and fought its way out of colonization, it's finally breathing the air as one country, really don't appreciate someone throwing this kind of charge at their feet. But where is the evidence that we even care about a proper approach. We don't have the Bloc, the NDP, the Conservative Party, the Liberal Party. Just engage in this exercise. Where was any evidence? Where did anybody challenge it during this whole discussion? Did anybody ask a signal? I haven't seen any evidence of any rigorous questioning of any of the witnesses, that kind of thing.
Oh, there was a desire to believe. And
a lust.
To what the desire could be attributed. A lust to believe, yes. And what procedure? It's a witch hunt. There is no procedure, simply accusation. And the more vile the accusation, the greater the will or willingness to believe and the unwillingness to question or to simply ask, this is a very grave charge. What is the basis for the charge? I mean, let's test the evidence. Well, maybe we didn't test the evidence because there's no evidence to test.
Yeah.
I mean, as I pointed out, it's even, I mean, if you want to push anyone like U.S. State Department lawyers, they say, well, there is no evidence. You can't make this accusation of genocide, at least not as defined by the UN Convention. Okay, well, in that case, then we'll simply have to redefine genocide to mean whatever we want it to mean. Mm-hmm. But the process has nothing to do with, inspecting evidence, examining the accusation, examining the source of the accusation. It's all about disparaging a economic and systemic rival.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're all engaged in now, isn't it? We're all engaged in a war against China.
We do have this club we belong to called the Five Eyes Club. It's I noticed that, which is Anglo-American, white, English-speaking nations who were part of the colonial exercise. And I was writing about this recently, and I realized that there was an old expression, the sun doesn't set on the British Empire. Actually, the sun doesn't set on the Five Eyes Empire. So, people to laugh at empire is gone. Well, if it's gone, the Five Eyes seem to be kicking, alive and kicking, trying to kick people and get us into trouble.
Yes, there's there's a satirical media group in Australia called, I think it's Juice Media, that would refer to the Five Eyes or non-US members of the Five Eyes as America's bitches or acolytes, or which is a rather apt description.
Again, it's Stephen Gowans, by the way, and it's gowans.blog. And Stephen, you're using a very good expression. I hope people will learn to say it. The device being that Canada, U.S. use is a dark legend. And, when you say dark legend, immediately old words come up, like the yellow peril, suspicion of foreigners, and he does something good, and that's proof that he's bad. He must be up to something. Feeding the people, for example. Now, that is a trick. You better watch out. He gives other countries vaccines, so that's vaccine diplomacy. We don't give anybody anything because we're principled people and we're free. The devil gives people vaccine. Dark legend is a nice term. If you want to talk about that a little.
Yeah, I mean, the dark legend, that's the opposite of the golden legend, and it's accompanied by a golden legend. So the black legend will apply to China or whatever country the United States will define as its adversary or rival. So this would apply to China and Russia. They're called revisionist powers because they challenge or want to revise the international order led by the United States. And accompanied that is the golden legend. So the United States and its acolytes are presented as being benign. No matter what they do, they're benign. And if they do something that doesn't seem benign, it's, well, they were well-intentioned, but things, you know, made some errors. On the other hand, the black legend, that is the adversaries, they never do anything. All they do is malevolent and malign. And whatever they do that is objectively benevolent was only done by error for some nefarious reasons, as you pointed out. You know, the Chinese provide various third world countries with vaccines. Well, that they have some ulterior motive. But if you know, applying the golden legend, if the United States were to do the same, well, then it would only reflect U.S. leadership and U.S. benevolence.
Yeah. I have a thought. I want to. You and I have talked about this over the years. Actually, I always remind our listeners that we seem to be losing World War II, and you know, Mr. Zenz and this organization that you refer to and seem to be at the center of all this nastiness towards China is the victims of communism. And you say, and I think in Ottawa they're building a monument to the victim, and they say communism. Another way to phrase that would be the victims of our former allies. China was the first victim in World War II. They were attacked by Japan at the beginning. You could date the beginning of World War II from the Japanese attack on China. And of course, the next big was the attack on the Soviet Union, both of which countries contributed mightily to the destruction of fascism and Nazism. And these monument builders regard our allies, and they want us to regard our allies as devils. That bothers me.
Yeah. Well, you know, even gazing out my window right now, I can see the as yet completed memorial to the victims of communism. And it's not too far away from Canada's National Holocaust Monument, which I can also see. Then there's nothing wrong with memorializing the Holocaust, but one can ask the question of why there's a Holocaust memorial in Canada and the United States when the Holocaust happened in Eastern Europe. But there's not a Holocaust memorial to the genocide of the American Indians or the Canadian Indians. Mm-hmm. And then the memorial to the victims of communism, well, you can ask, who are these victims of communism anyway? And the victims of communism were the Nazis and the fascists and their supporters who perpetrated the Holocaust, which we memorialized like half a kilometer away from where we're memorializing the people who actually perpetrated this genocide against the Jews and the Slavs and others.
No, that's a very important point. I, by the way, I wish we could go on. I think we're coming to the end, but that we have now in East Europe people who are celebrating the ones who committed the genocide in Europe. And this matters really needs to be, the word genocide should be carefully used. And I'm really glad you called attention to it. This is Stephen Gowans. And the article is titled "The Problematic Relationship of Canada's Parliament to the Concept of Genocide." I think it's an essential read. Stephen, we thank you very much for being with us. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much, Phil, for having me.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.